Stage Podcast, episode number 28. I'm Jordan Rao.
I'm Daniel John Mecca.
Whoa, Dan, I have not heard your voice recently.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Dan is back.
No way. I've been back for a little bit for sure.
Nice. Yeah, well, we're going to tell you what we think of the A-Team, and then I saw Karate Kid and Winter's Bone, so we're going to talk about that. And Dan's reading Winter's Bone.
Yeah, I decided to read the book first, so I've been taking a look at that. It's pretty good so far.
Nice. All right. Well, let's get into news stories, dude. You want to?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so first news story, kind of the most surprising news story
of
the week.
Ridiculous news story of the week.
So yeah, 2007, Ghost Rider. Did you see Ghost Rider?
I caught it on cable.
You did?
I did. Caught it on HBO. Was a few months after the release.
Now Nicolas Cage had a rough few years, like
in
that time period.
He did. Yeah. I actually saw Next, which might be his worst movie, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's possible. I saw Next at a drive-in. Yeah, and then I crashed my car because it was that bad. No, but I saw Next, which I think came out. Was that the same year? I think it was.
I think it was.
I think it was the summer after Ghost Rider, which came out in February. Mm-hmm. I think. But anyway, it was a rough year for the Cage.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure 2006 wasn't much better. So it was a rough couple of years, like you said. So, yeah, looking at it now, we got, oh yeah, oh my god, 06 was rough. He had World Trade Center, which is a bad movie. I actually felt bad, I had never seen it, and I tried to watch it, and I got bored. Mm-hmm. I felt bad that I got bored, you know, because it's about the World Trade Center, but I got bored, so. Anyway, so World Trade Center, The Wicker Man, from 06, and then Ghost Rider, his little thing in Grindhouse, which was actually kind of funny, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Next, and National Treasure 2, all in the same year. So 07 might have been the worst year of his career.
Yeah.
And it started with Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider, yeah. Well, now,
directed by Roman Polanski. I'm sorry, just kidding.
That's
directed directed by
the guy that did
Mark
Steven Rome.
Johnson.
Mine in Rome.
Mm-hmm. Also, the great mind behind Daredevil.
Yes. So no, we got news today that there was a rumor of a sequel in the works, and now it's happening. And Neville Dean Taylor,
the creative minds.
Yes,
and you could certainly call him creative.
Definitely.
Behind the Crank films and Gamer.
Yeah, and they wrote
and Pathology. They directed it.
They did not direct it.
They wrote it. And then there's one more that we're forgetting that they did.
Yeah.
But it's,
whatever.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so they're in negotiations to direct the sequel, and David Goyer, who wrote The Dark Knight, is writing Superman, and then he also wrote a couple bad movies that we don't.
Did he write Ghost Rider? He wrote the first one.
I don't know if he wrote the first one, but he's writing this one right now, and actually, Neville Dean Taylor might have a hand at the script, which is kind of interesting because this week we see Jonah Hex coming out,
right? Which they got fired from.
Yeah, but it's weird because they had somewhere I was reading that they still have some, like, they used a lot of their stuff.
I'm sure. I mean, that's stuff like that happens all the time.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, they don't have any credits on the movie, right, though,
right.
I assume, right?
Yeah. Mark Steven Johnson actually wrote that.
That's right. Oh, my God. And he wrote the screen story as well, the screenplay.
The story.
Wow. Such a creative story.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think about, I mean, were you excited for Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, as it's titled? Were you excited a week ago?
Oh, man. Let me tell you. I really the thing about Ghost Rider is, you know, the thing about that film that really, the way it succeeds is in the subtlety, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the subtlety of the color palettes.
Yeah.
And just, like, the humor. Like, for example, when Nicolas Cage says that he feels like his skull's on fire. so the joke, of course, being that, like, you know, when he becomes the Ghost Rider at night, he's a skull that's on fire.
Yeah.
So, I mean, subtle, the fact that it's literally saying a joke that's explaining what he is at night.
Right, that's what I mean. Okay.
So just that kind of really smart, intelligent writing.
It takes a rewatch. It's like Shutter Island. It takes a rewatch. It's a layered film.
So just really, the rewatchability is really high.
So now with Neville Dean Taylor,
I think they'll really just add another layer of just abstract, bullshit to it, and then they'll just really be. On all seriousness, to clarify, I think we're both defenders, supporters, for the most part, of Neville Dean Taylor.
The Nevte movement,
as you so eloquently said. I mean, I really enjoyed Crank. I really enjoyed Crank High Voltage. A game
I didn't really enjoy Crank High Voltage.
I thought you did enjoy it.
No, it was okay. It was, like, so much. It was, like, too much.
Okay.
But I really did like Gamer.
Yeah. No, no, I did. I liked Gamer 2 for what it was. Like, yeah. I really... Like, I liked Gamer more than Death Race.
Yes. I have not seen
Death Race. Oh, I thought you had seen it. Yeah, like, considering they're the same exact
similar. Movie.
Yeah. And Jason Statham is such a better action star than Gerard Butler. Like, considering that Death Race really should have... I mean, it's directed by Paul W.S. Anderson.
Right, right.
For God's sake. But, like... You know, considering that Statham and, you know, you had, you know, Ian McShane and stuff, it should have been a better movie, but somehow, and I think this is a credit to Neville Dean Taylor, Gamer was more enjoyable, because they definitely have some sort of style, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, obviously the problem with Crank wasn't the style for me, because I really, the high voltage, I mean.
Right, right.
It was that kind of, like, the story.
I'm more excited now. I guess what is Fox does this, right?
Yeah, they want to start.
So I guess if Fox gives them a little bit of freedom, it doesn't really seem possible though. But I guess you know what I mean. Like I'm just trying to think of how Ghost Rider.
It'll be a really interesting to see
this. Like Ghost Rider 2.
Yeah, when it first got announced, I was like, kind of like,
because the first movie didn't even do really that well. I mean, it did okay.
Overseas, it did.
Did it? Well, yeah. I mean, it did. I mean, but I don't know. It just kind of seems. What are you gonna do? So I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I would have, frankly, honestly, I would have much rather had a Daredevil sequel because I do kind of enjoy Daredevil as a movie. Like, there are some really nice parts of that movie actually. But anyway, so I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Next news story. Louis Leterrier, who brought us, which actually I just watched his first movie, Unleashed. I really like that. Was really, really good style.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Probably still his best movie. I mean,
yeah.
His best movie.
He did Incredible Hulk. He will transported 2 first, then Incredible Hulk.
That's right. Oh my god, it was good he did that.
And Clash of the Titans.
So three kind of mediocre movies in a row. I mean, I enjoyed Transformer 2 a lot just because it's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of got worse. I know we don't agree on Clash of the Titans.
I don't know. Clash of the Titans is worse than Incredible Hulk. Incredible Hulk is just terrible.
Now he has a new film coming up called Gravity. And it's also called Gravity, but it's not, which we will actually talk about in the next story.
So it's not Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity with RDJ.
It must just be like, you know, the spec title.
Are they going to change the title of this to Bagman?
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
Okay. And so this plot is being described as Taken meets Day After Tomorrow. It revolves around a man who must find his missing son. All right, now that sounds kind of normal. Get ready. As the world stops spinning and Earth loses its gravity.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so...
I would have loved to have been in that room for that pitch.
Yeah.
It's about a guy who loses his son while the Earth loses gravity.
No, yeah, I mean, I would much rather see. I mean, I was reading an interview where he said he already had like plans for Clash of the Titans sequels, but it looks like they're not going to go with him for he's not going to direct the sequel.
Oh, Jonathan leaves him.
Yeah. Which it's actually shooting in January. They said
it's good. I'm glad. You know, I'm really glad they're taking the time to develop a really solid story for the second Clash.
It's gonna
you know, just because the first one was so layered as well, just like Ghost Rider. So
are we gonna do this every story? Yeah. Where
sorry, I was just but I think that that's a cool premise though, and I think that like you know. But you know,
seems
like,
really expensive. That's all I wanted to think about
before the podcast. It's gonna be hard to make this movie. I would hope they didn't make it in the same vein they made 2012, which is like a kind of like an expensive movie, but one that doesn't feel expensive just because it's so big.
Yeah,
that it doesn't actually have enough money to match up to what it's trying to go for, so it kind of becomes a cheap movie, which is ironic because it costs so much, So I hope it's like that because it does seem like a premise worth investing in, you know, fully. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, but there's no other details available, but we'll keep you updated.
Both Incredible Hulk and Clash were mild successes.
Yeah.
So I mean, hopefully he'll get enough people behind him to help this movie get made.
Yeah. Now you want to talk about the next Gravity? The other Gravity. Now this really is called Gravity, and it really is coming out. It's shooting this summer. It's Alfonso Cuarón's.
Thank God he's finally making another movie.
I know. It'll be like probably 6 years
by the time it comes out.
Yeah. But he directed Children of Men, which is both of our favorite movies, I would say. And Robert Downey Jr. He's gonna shoot Sherlock Holmes 2
first,
and then he's gonna
shoot. Wait, he's shooting it first.
Yeah.
So they're shooting it soon.
He'll have to leave halfway through, and because Gravity has a ton of CG stuff, so I feel it's the type of shoot where like they're gonna I feel like it's an Avatar type shoot where like they kind of ask the actors to come back kind of thing. Yeah. I feel like, I don't know. In this, a news article came out today that the movie would be 60% CG, and it kind of mix elements, kind of like Avatar did.
Like Green Lantern is trying to do?
Green Lantern is just the suit.
Right, well, yeah so.
But it said it's going to balance hybrid CG and live action elements. And one of the cooler things is that Alfonso Cuarón is currently planning an opening shot of at least 20 minutes. Obviously, it won't be like... It'll be like the Children of Men shot where...
It's manipulated.
But the film, the basic premise is it's a survivor thriller that follows a woman as she attempts to make her way back to Earth after a satellite crash sets off a chain of reaction of further crashes. And then she finds this... Because it was originally supposed to be an Angelina Jolie.
Right.
And Robert Downey Jr. kind of had like a smaller part, I assume.
So who's the girl?
They don't know yet. It's Angelina Jolie really dropped out, so right. They're still got to figure that out. This is definitely one of my most anticipated movies.
Yeah,
sci-fi.
I'm just reading right now. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting.
Yeah. If he can match, it's kind of funny because like Children of Men, like how people a lot of think like how can you top that? And like there you go, right in the beginning of the movie.
In terms of shots. Yeah. I mean.
And this seems more of kind of like a blockbuster. He's doing it for Warner Brothers. It's not like, you know.
Yeah.
So, definitely, yeah.
We'll see what happens. I really hope that this doesn't hit any delays, you know, or any more delays at least. Yeah. So, I mean, I just, it seems like these freaking Mexican directors who are making that move. All right, is Cuarón Mexican? Or are they Spanish or Mexican?
That's bad. We should look. No, Mexican because he did.
Cuarón is, isn't he?
Yeah, because he did.
Yeah. Guillermo del Toro. Guillermo del Toro. I'm not sure. But anyway, my point is, these Latin directors, Latin American directors, I guess you can call them now. They're, you know, staples for crossover, you know, careers, and it's just a shame that kind of lately there's been so much stalemates with all their projects with like you know del Toro and The Hobbit and all that stuff.
True. Alright, well then, actually,
so hopefully.
Another link to this story, Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, yeah, true.
The next story we're going to talk about is Sam Raimi will officially direct Oz the Great and Powerful. And it'll be
another guy who hasn't had anything going on for a while, right?
I know, yeah. After Spider-Man 4 fell apart.
Well, but also...
And also Spider-Man 3.
Spider-Man
3. But no, he's been offered the director's chair, and then it was confirmed that he will officially do it. The script's being rewritten right now, and it's kind of like a prequel, and Robert Downey Jr. is playing... a wizard.
The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. So, yeah.
The title character.
And it's supposed to be kind of, like, dark, I guess, so.
Yeah, I mean, Wizard of Oz, the original, is, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, for a children's-based kind of thing, it is mm-hmm. very dark if you That's watch true. It, you know. A lot of,
I was terrified of them.
You know, hence the Dark Side of Oz little thing that you can do with Pink Floyd.
But, you know, Sam Raimi...
Dark Side of the Moon, sorry.
Yeah. I almost feel like, actually, listening to Slash Filmcast, they were talking how, like, actually, this is a project that Guillermo del Toro kind of would have been cool for, because he kind of, because, like, I feel like Sam Raimi's kind of more, like,
because
if it's, like, that creepy fantasy.
But Evil Deads they're gothic fantasies. And also, trying to think of what else. Oh, like, I mean, he's good. He's good at that little stuff. He's really good at that, like, just little... creepy stuff like The Gift is such an underrated great movie. That's like got a very like it's like a you know got a really creepy murder mystery kind of thing going on, you know what I mean? Like I just feel like he's good at stuff. I mean obviously this is gonna be I imagine a big movie, but kind of like Army of Darkness, you know what I mean? Like Army of Darkness was a big budget, you know, for what it was, and that's great. It's a great movie. So cool. I think he'll do a good job.
He'll keep you updated. It's being written also by Mitchell Kapner, who did Whole Nine Yards, and Romeo Must Die. I don't know.
Romeo Must Die, oh my god.
Now, let's move on to the next story, Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, which I'd
be doomed.
Dude, Josh Whedon, man. The poison that is him, in terms of the in terms of the silver screen.
And he co-wrote this movie, right, with Drew Goddard, who He's directing it.
Yeah,
this was going to come out. We were actually going to see this movie in January. And then it got delayed an entire year for 3D post-production.
That was the weirdest. Do you remember that?
Yeah, like, an entire year. So strange. I don't know why.
And it actually stars
Chris Hemsworth, Richard Jenkins, which is awesome.
Right, yeah.
Bradley Whitford. And
now it'll never come out.
Yeah, and there was an update. We actually talked about it last time. It's kind of like a monster movie, which we didn't know previously. But now MGM, all this crazy shit's happening with them, and they can't find funding for their movies. Number 23 got delayed, and The Hobbit, and then which actually might not get delayed, but at least Del Toro's off. There's another news that Ian McKellen said it will actually film this year, definitely, and they're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, just my opinion. There is no weight to that quote at all. Like, what does Ian McKellen know at all? Like, it's not.
Me and John talked about that on
the
podcast.
He's the Michael Caine. Michael Caine of.
There was this actor's what is your move?
Ian McKellen is definitely doing other things. You know, his agent's probably telling him that. I don't know. Red Dawn.
Yeah, we also heard this week that the Red Dawn remake got delayed. It was actually a funny quote. There was an inside.
I'm not that sad about that.
There was a studio. Yeah, I know. There was a studio insider who reported. This was a quote from him. We'd be sitting in a meeting with all these problems and $4 billion of debt. It's not funny. And we'd be talking about that night's Lakers tickets. There was always two MGMs, the old MGM and the Mary Parent MGM. If Mary Parent had her way, the Bond film would come out in November. So she's like the new, the old people.
I don't understand. But so what are you saying, though? The old people
they still own
part
of the company, and they're not being proactive about
saving the company.
Yeah. And Mary Parent, she has stake in it, so it's.
I've heard they don't even have control of their own money anymore.
I've heard that
creditors own MGM.
Yeah,
right
I'm sure it's a mess with all the way movies get financed now. It's like, you don't.
I mean, Quantum of Solace. I mean, that had a $200 million budget. Yeah. I mean, it made money, but I'm just saying, it's like there can't be.
But it's really sad. I mean, it said there's no marketing. They're not putting any money towards trailers or anything, and. It will probably be pushed.
Hot Tub Time Machine was the last release, right?
Yeah. And
Which didn't do that well.
Yeah. And they said it'll either be pushed or even canceled, which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's really disappointing.
I see Cabin in the Woods on DVD shelves in 3 years.
I know. Oh. So I hope they get their shit together. And it's not like a trick-or-treat thing or something. You know, I don't know, like that.
It's horrible.
All right. Well, let's talk about our last story of the day. Last night, it was reported that Alex Garland...
great writer.
Yes, frequent Danny Boyle collaborator.
Mm-hmm.
We started with The Beach, and then they did 28 Days Later in Sunshine.
I always think it's funny because there's a story about... I mean, he wrote the book, The Beach, which is an amazing book. And then he didn't write the screenplay for the Beach.
Did he? He didn't contribute?
I don't think so. Well, at least he doesn't have a credit.
Mm-hmm.
But... there was an interview about what he thought about the movie, and he said that he thought it was shit. And then he ended up writing two movies for the guy who directed The Beach. So I don't understand. I don't understand what happened there.
Yeah.
They also made an independent movie, The Tesseract, which was his second novel, and that's not a good movie with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. But he's been making movies though lately, and the new story we have now is.
Well, you'll be Never Let Me Go, which actually we can talk about
Never Let Me Go, yeah.
And that check out that trailer if you can. Just
but he's doing a draft of the Judge Dredd remake.
Right. And
also
Halo,
now...
Halo.
Halo, he's done a few drafts of. But also now we have the news that he's doing the remake of Logan's Run, which is probably, I would equate it in terms of intelligent remakes, I would equate it to Tron.
Yeah.
You know, not that Tron's a remake, but I mean like...
You know, like
essentially
an update, version.
You know, like...
Well, they would talk because in Logan's Run is very much made for its time. Like I haven't read the book, or actually, Dan and I, we haven't seen the movie, so
yeah, no. But I mean, everybody who's ever talked about it I've talked about it or read about it has said it's very much, you know, it's dated in its time, and you know,
it
at the time
it
had a lot of good ideas, but like, you know, obviously it's you know, it could use an update, just like Tron. So I think and I think Alex Garland. I mean, he's good. He's good at sci-fi.
What do you think? Sunshine, I mean, a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, I love Sunshine. Even
well, I mean, a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people hate on Alex Garland for the third act. But I don't know. I will forever defend it.
Me too.
I will forever defend. I mean, I guess I don't know. The third act of a lot of his things, people don't like. people don't like the third act of 28 Days Later because they don't like how it becomes like an action movie, mm-hmm. and chase film, which I've always disagreed with because I felt like that movie was always supposed to collapse into chaos at the end, you know, even visually. Like, so that I've never understood. And then Sunshine is similar, kind of, and I always kind of maintain that, like, Penn Baker, you know, at the end of the film might be, I mean, you know, obviously it's not alluded to at all, and this is totally just a personal feeling, but, like, he might be in some way, like, a composite just kind of representation of insanity, you know what I mean? Like, and obviously that, I mean, literally they have an explanation for how he got on the ship and everything, so, yeah, I'm probably shooting at blanks, I'm probably shooting blanks, but, like, I just think, I mean, if you take it the way you should take most Danny Boyle movies, I feel like, kind of as more of a visual experience, and it didn't bother me. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't, I don't know, and it doesn't bother me, so.
Totally.
It seems like Garland and him have a good communication, I mean, even if other people kind of disagree, so.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be sick to see Danny Boyle do Logan's Run, even though I'm pretty sure he'll never make another sci-fi movie.
After
But. But I mean,
with enough money, anyone?
Right.
But if you don't, Logan's Run, if you don't know, is about a future universe where people have to kill themselves.
Yeah.
Well, kind of like suicide at a certain age. And I think it's 30. And
this is The Happening.
Yeah, it's directed
by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In the future.
Yeah.
Like, but it's a really good premise, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really good, and then it's
kind of like the guy. One guy is hunted by operatives, and he has to go on the run.
His name's Logan.
His name's Logan.
Then he goes on a run.
Yeah.
Logan's run.
Yeah. No, but I mean, Carl Eric Rinch or whatever. Rinch.
He's rumored.
He's signed. He's
direct. Oh, that's right. He's signed on director.
And, finally, hoping it doesn't fall through.
Yeah, but you know what, though? He's had so many projects that people are like, finally, gets to direct a movie, and then it falls through.
Yeah.
I want to know what happened with that Ridley Scott thing. Like, why did, because he was supposed to direct the prequel, the Alien prequel.
Yeah.
And then Ridley Scott just said
he said he wanted to do it.
Was that just really what happened?
He's like, because he was exactly a producer, and he's like, actually, I'm going to do it.
Did he get me thinking about it?
You know what's really funny, actually? Ridley Scott, they had this Hero Complex Film Festival, the LA Times blog guy, he ran, and they had Christopher Nolan up there, and they showed Insomnia this past week, and he did a Q&A, and it was kind of cool. He talked about his feelings on 3D and stuff, and how he didn't like it, but he would do a 3D if he considered, if like, they did more tests on, I guess they did tests for Inceptions, and he just didn't like the way it looked. But he said he would never shoot a film in 3D, but he would do it in post-production because just like the mechanics of a 3D camera on set is really odd. Mm. And you can kind of tell with these movies. But anyways, the next night, then really, Scott hosted a screening of Alien and talked afterwards. And Alex Billington from First Showing, he asked him, because people got to ask questions. And there was a quote from Ridley Scott a few years ago where he said, sci-fis are as dead as Westerns. And so
that's right.
And
oh my
so he asked him that, and so he didn't say anything. They just went to the next question. I don't know. He said they didn't respond.
Really?
So it's like,
wow.
And I guess the Q&A. I guess there was a lot of rambling on. Like, he just kept talking about different things and never really got. And there was not like a lot. But he talked about the alien.
He seems like he kind of really Scott. Seems kind of like an obsessive director, kind of.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you read the story about Robin Hood. It said how he got obsessed with archery or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I mean, like, look, I liked Robin
Hood.
Wasn't
that much
we liked Robin Hood. It was a decent amount. But, like, I don't know how much truth there, I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, it seems like he's kind of like Scorsese, someone who becomes just really ingrained in one specific thing and then he creates a movie out of it, kind of a thing. So, so I feel like,
I mean, it's supposed to, I guess.
Rinks, is that his name? Rinch?
Yeah, you just kind of have to, like, mumble it.
You just mumble it. It works the way that you do Vincenzo Natale.
Oh, Vincenzo
Natale. But anyway.
I don't think the premise is that cool. Like, they're explaining kind of, he's like, we're going to explain where the space jockey came from, and then he's going to explain where, like, he said, we'll probably talk about where the aliens came from, and, like, I don't really need, like, I would rather see
something
else.
What I was going to say, though, is,
and why do you need two prequels? Why do you need that?
Screenplay. Well, as you know, he loves doing prequels because Robin Hood was a prequel. But
two of them? Do you need two? He's planning two aliens.
Why that? Whatever. I heard he was planning an Alien versus a Predator prequel.
Oh, okay.
He's going to explain the aliens and then the Predators.
We'll explain everything. You don't. Probably doesn't need to explain it.
Oh, my God. But what I was going to say, it feels like 3 hours ago, was that Rinch must have written a really good draft to get Ridley Scott interested in the franchise again, because of all the shit that's come out since the Cameron movie.
That's true, yeah.
You know, the studio ruined 3, apparently, and then Resurrection came out. Oof.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just seems like there must be something good. There must be some sort of source, like, just base of goodness to have for this thing to be good. I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, so, we'll see. But anyway, the gift is amazing. So, like, I think that he's a good decision for Logan's Run. I mean, not the gift, not Raimi's The Gift, the short film The Gift.
Right, yeah.
That Rich directed. Yeah. So I think that Logan's Definitely. Run should work out, especially with Garland writing. So we'll see.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's all it for news stories. If you want to check out any other news stories, just follow thefilmstage.com, and that's your up-to-date news source.
All right, let's do reviews.
All right, let's do it. Dan.
Yes.
You want to start with Karate Kid? I'll just talk about it a little.
Yes.
It doesn't need a lot of talking about.
Okay.
The Karate Kid. Karate Kid. Now, this is an update to The Karate Kid.
The Same Karate title. Kid. The Karate Kid.
Yeah. And it stars little Jaden Smith.
Little J.
Big Jackie Chan. And Tahara P. Henson.
Tahara, yeah.
There you go. Thanks. Okay. And those are the only three recognizable people in the entire movie.
A lot of Asians.
And then the rest of the Asians. But no, I actually recently rewatched the original Karate Kid, and then I think it was like last year. I actually never saw it from start to end. It wasn't one of the... Everyone said they grew up with the Karate Kid, but I never...
I did, yeah. I definitely grew up with it. Yeah, I loved it when I was...
I remember all the sequences when I rewatched it, but I never saw them from front to back. And so this new update, directed by Harold Zwart.
Yeah. Auteur.
Behind Pink Panther 2. And then somehow he came out with this movie, which is actually a really, really entertaining film. Now, if you want to check out my full review, you can go on the film stage, but I'll just give you a brief
hit me with
thoughts. It is the same structure, like the exact same structure of the movie. Every beat, every story structure is the same, but it works, I mean, for a movie like this. And like a lot of movies, they'll reboot them or update them, and they'll drastically change it, or they won't change it enough. But in this one, I feel like they changed all the aspects they needed to enough, because, I mean, that's why everyone, I feel like, loved the Karate Kid, kind of like the
underdog
story. Yeah. And they keep that the exact same. One awesome...
Rocky Light.
Yes. And one great thing about this movie is the idea to go to China instead of, the first one was in California.
Yeah, of course.
And, yeah, and then so they go to China, and it's just, like, beautiful landscape. Like someone commented, like, there's no way you can shoot China ugly, because I guess there's a lot of beautiful stuff there.
Oh, so much culture.
Yeah. And almost kind of unnecessary landscape, too. Like, there's a sequence that makes no sense. There's one shot in the movie, which is in the trailer, where they're fighting on the Great Wall at the top, and there's no lead-up to that. Like, they just...
Oh, really?
It's like a montage, and they're just on the Great Wall. It's, like...
Kind of weird.
Yeah. That's funny.
There's no tourists that are, like, looking at him, like, what are
yeah,
they...
Yeah,
it's literally take a picture of that black like, kid on the Navy yeah. that are just
it's like they karate. It's like they got, like one day to shoot this shot, and, like, it's just a sweeping helicopter shot of them on there, and that's it. The movie, it starts right off with them moving to China. They're on a plane. Like, they're leaving their old apartment on a plane. One part of the movie, they don't really... Tahara P. Henson. They don't really... Her character is really underdeveloped. Like, they don't really talk about anything. It's mostly about the J-Dog. J. Smith.
Yeah. Little Will.
And, no, I mean, he actually does a surprisingly good job.
Is that surprising? I thought he was really good in Pursuit of Happiness. No?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's kind of...
But I guess really?
Know. Yeah.
See, I don't know. I really dug him. Yeah. I really dug him.
But, like, for this movie, he kind of has to...
But I guess because he's the lead in this one.
Yeah, he, like, literally, every scene almost. And,
now, how is Mr. Chan?
Oh.
Or Mr. Han?
He's great.
Is he?
Yeah, he's great. Wow. Now, there's not one... I went with another friend, and coming out of the screening, like, he doesn't do too much action, so if you're one, like, kind of like at the Rush Hour, like, Mr. Nice Guy, kind of like clap, like,
right.
That's a Jackie Chan action. There is one sequence, which he proves he can still do it, like, it's kind of the playful kind of fighting.
Well, did you not see The Forbidden Kingdom?
No, I actually
totally
didn't.
Still, yeah. Me neither, so.
Okay.
But, yeah. Anyway.
But what's more even surprising than that is that there's a scene that is so emotional. Like, I was, like, shocked that Jackie Chan was doing it. There's, like, this build-up, which I never, in the first movie, I don't think there's much, like, he kind of gets redeemed, Mr. Miyagi. gets redeemed through, like, at the end, like, the kids. Anyways, in this movie.
Wait, what do you mean, in the first movie?
In the first movie, like, I don't remember if like, because there's this whole, like, play thing where Jackie Chan's kind of like this. He's a janitor, obviously, and a maintenance man, like Mr. Miyagi was, and kind of looked down upon the kids and lives a very, like, lonely life and stuff. And then at the end, like, these kids that he, in this Karate Kid, the update, Jackie Chan, like, fights in the beginning, there's just, like, this huge, like, rivalry between Jackie Chan and the Kung Fu master. And by the way, this movie is all Kung Fu. It's not Karate Kid, and I alluded to that. But the Kung Fu master of the rival team and him, like, kind of, like, are dueling.
I don't think there was that.
Then at the end, there's this nice moment that kind of redeems. But that's not the emotional moment. There's another one that involves a whole backstory with him that I didn't expect at all. And it really handled well. The other thing that's really, really surprising about this movie is how violent it is. Like,
I heard there was a couple reviews that said it just wasn't that fun to watch little kids.
Yeah, it was like you actually, like, the punches are harder than most, like, R-rated action movies. Like,
that's crazy.
Like, when, like, in the beginning, like, Jaden Smith gets in a fight and gets, like, kicked down, like, in his chest and, like, flies, and, like, it's like, hold, like, wow. But other than that, I mean, it's really good, because a lot of these family films and, like, kids movies don't really give you a reason to, like the build up at the end, like, with that, mm-hmm. you know, they all have that moment.
There's not that much invested.
Yeah, exactly. And this movie, definitely, there is. Even the their version of Wax On and Wax Off is Jack It Off. It's kind of funny here in Jackie Chan. But anyways, but it works in this movie. It's just a really enjoyable movie. Definitely not one that you'll think about a lot. I mean, it's just, like, an enjoyable. It is really long, but it didn't bother me. 2.5 hours.
Almost. Yeah, no, it's so long.
It's so long. It didn't really. I mean, by the end, you kind of feel it, but it's really, really enjoyable. An enjoyable film.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go check it out.
Check it out. It's making a lot of money, and there's actually a sequel on the way.
Of course, there is.
Of course. Why not? But yeah.
Speaking of remakes.
Another 80s.
Another 80s staple.
The A-Team.
The A-Team.
Was released this past week. Directed by Joe Carnahan. Do you want to talk about this movie?
Yeah, I saw this movie. I saw this one. I have to say that I enjoyed it a lot. I had a very good time with this film. Let's see if I can just break it down really quickly. Bob Bradley Cooper was very funny. Liked him as Face. Thought Charlton Copley was really funny. Really liked him as Mad Dog, Murdoch. Thought Liam Neeson was kind of wasted. Didn't like his accent. Thought that his Hannibal was fairly standard. You know, his jokes were some of the flattest. The whole cigar thing kind of lost its luster. And the whole Love When a Planet Comes Together.
I'm just going to say that. They say it four, show. They say it like at least four times.
For show. And the best one is actually the last one. And that's Liam Neeson doesn't even say it. So, and it's his phrase. Jessica Biel literally plays the exact same character she played in Stealth, which directed by Rob Cohen.
Yes.
Anyway, horrible movie. So whatever, she's in it. And then Quentin Rampage, UFC fighter Jackson.
Is that what he's from?
B.A. Baracus is just bad. But you know what, though? He's not a real actor, whatever. Mr. T wasn't that good anyway. That was the thing that I thought was so funny about it. Like, can I just say, when we were doing news for this movie, you know, like, recording news for this movie, like, and Bradley Cooper said this too, the whole Mr. T thing, like, who's going to be B.A. Baracus was, like, a big, I guess, thing. And Bradley Cooper said, we knew that 80% of this movie's success was based on, and some interviews, like, we knew 80% of this movie's success was based on who we got to play B.A. Baracus. And I remember thinking, like, was it?
Then why?
Like, because Mr. T's famous now because he's, like, a pop culture sensation. But, like, I bet if you ask most kids our age why Mr. T is famous, they would either come up with Rocky III, where he played Clubber Lang.
Yeah, yeah.
Or probably not even. They would probably just be like, oh, because he's, like, on all these reality shows. You know what I mean? Because he's become, like, you know, like...
an 80s staple, but not...
Yeah, like a Gary Coleman, kind, you know, may he rest, a Gary Coleman kind of a staple, you know, which is not meant to be a slant, but just honestly, that is what he is. He's, like, you know, a gimmick. Yeah. You know? So, like, and his character in the show for the few episodes I saw was really not much more. So, anyway, my point is, like, he's not a professional actor. He doesn't do that good of a job, but it's not really that important because his character is kind of, like, a waste anyway. He says fool a lot. Yeah. I'm gonna kill you, fool! And I guess he says that kind of good. I don't, like, it's funny. So.
Well, you can't, but anyway. You can't understand anything he says.
No,
you can understand that.
Yeah. So Jessica Biel and Rampage are not good or not really bad. They're just kind of there. Whatever.
Jessica Biel, I thought she was really bad. Like,
you did?
Yeah, she was. It was so boring. Like, her entire performance. And her entire. With Bradley Cooper.
I thought they had. There was the one scene where, like, first of all, let me just say this about a thing that made me actually a little angry. Okay. And this is going to be a weird comparison. But, and Remember Me, starring Robert Pattinson. Hang on, I'm just going to say this. All right. Which is PG-13. There is a sex scene in that movie, okay? Him and Emily DeRaven, they start making out, they rip each other's clothes off, and they have sex. Now look, it's obviously a PG-13 movie, you don't see any boobs or anything like that, but like, it's like Titanic, the sounds are made, the actions are made,
well,
there's
Titanic,
looks,
you see.
Well, not when they're having sex, asshole,
that's true.
All right?
True.
Gosh. But anyway, sorry. Oh, I apologize. Do you remember earlier when I called you an asshole?
Yeah.
I apologize. Okay. So that was one of the reasons I really respected that movie, because you don't see that in PG-13 movies that much anymore. Instead, what you see now is what was in the 18, which is it really had been bothering me, which is like, and it was in Prince of Persia too. It was in Prince of Persia too, Prince of Persia is a far worse movie than the 18.
Yeah.
Far worse for Blockbuster Entertainment. But there are these, I think it's like two or three almost kiss scenes between Bradley Coops and Jay Beals. And it's just like if two people that hot and that attractive, which is the same thing, and that attracted to each other, who used to date, were in an enclosed space during a hot tension situations, they would be making out. So just do it. Just do it. Like, who in the world that's going to go watch this movie anyway cares about it? Like, the freaking Passion of the Christ nuttos aren't going to see the A-Team anyway, so they're not going to worry about if Bradley Cooper wears a condom when he has sex with Jessica Biel, so you can just film the kissing.
Yeah.
Film the kissing. So that was a problem that I have with the movie, for sure.
Yes.
But I thought that Coops was the best part of the movie. Okay, he's got a very natural presence.
And Copley
was.
Yeah.
I
mean, every time he was on
together,
screen,
they're definitely
together.
The scenes that they had together were the best scenes for sure.
The scene where I got spoilers, but the scene where he has to tattoo or stitch together,
and he does Baracus, Well, let's start from the beginning. What did you think about? Okay, so in the beginning of the film, there is literally an intro where it's an origin, like a little 10-minute origin story, and I'll say. It's very standard, but like, I liked the way that they did it. It was very quick. It was
set
very funny.
Set
the stone for the whole movie. So I liked it. What'd you think?
Well, first of all, this movie is retarded. But I like that. I love it. Like, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
I don't want
this is what I'll say though. Yes, it's retarded. Yes, I mean, pardon our political incorrectness. It is retarded, and I guess from the trailers, definitely didn't sell itself as anything else.
Yes,
for sure. But what I was going to say is, though, I guess the one thing that makes me a little sad is this really, like, just the best we're going to get from now on from Joe Carnahan?
Yeah.
Because for a guy who just kind of had a lot of promise with Narc, which really just came out and kind of blew some people away, and has definitely gained somewhat of a cult following, and then, you know, you take that and then you add, like, the four really inspired projects that he's had that have fallen through. And also, The Gray, which is the screenplay he wrote with another guy whose name is escaping me, but I read it, and it's really a great mid-range studio project, which Bradley Cooper's attached to, actually, and he would be perfect for the lead character. But what I'm saying is, I mean, if all of his projects like The Gray are getting shot down because of one reason or another, because apparently he's very hard to work with. Mission Impossible 3 fell apart because him and Tom Cruise ended up totally disagreeing, stuff like that. Then is all he's going to be able to do just kind of like fun crap like the A-Team, which is exactly what it is. I mean, it's really fun crap. Like, it's what Prince of Persia should have been, you know, like just a kind of a rousing adventure.
Yeah.
And it definitely was more fun than I thought it would be, for sure.
Yeah.
But it just kind of makes me a little sad because, you know, at least it's better than Smoking Aces, but it's not much better. And so that's, I guess, the biggest pet peeve I have with the movie. But, anyway, so I like the opening.
I like the opening. Yeah, I like the opening. Yeah, I mean, it kind of sets a tone that the whole movie is kind of a little messy. Like, I mean, even the editing-wise, like, you could tell. Like,
sure.
I mean, the scene, okay, so in the beginning, first of all, where it makes no sense is when they meet up together, Bia Baracus meets Liam Neeson in the middle of the desert. And then they go. So, like, from there on, you're like, all right, let's do it. And then they get to this action scene, and, like, it's made up of, like, totally just incomprehensible. Like, I thought that first action scene where they rescue him, firing, he grabs the girl in the van, like, you don't kind of know how Bradley Cooper, like,
You know what's funny? I didn't realize
he even grabbed the girl.
That they grabbed the girl.
Yeah, like, it's kind of that stuff, but I was like, oh, she's actually in the van. And it's kind of like this, like, drawing, like, I don't know, like, it would have been cool if there was more wide angles and stuff, but obviously that's not how Joe Carnahan shoots, and that's not
kind of I guess movie. Not, no.
But no, but, like, but I like that, like, whatever, it was fine, it got my attention, it wasn't, like, Anyways,
it's kind of like the way that the last two Bourne movies were shot in terms of action. I mean, not as well edited, which is to say, you know, the way that Greengrass shoots is very chaotic, and the editor or whatever, you know, they do a very good job in finding some sort of order in the chaos.
Right.
And whoever did the editing for the A-Team did not do as good a job.
It was Bourne, like, oh man, that was awesome, that punch. But with this, I'm like, whoa, stuff's happening, okay, and then it's over.
Like, and like what you're saying, it actually appears like they maybe didn't get enough coverage.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of interesting. And one
thing that's maybe that pissed me off so much is, and obviously some scenes it does work, but the flashbacks, like wait, whoa, there's a flashback for Jessica Biel when she sees Patrick Wilson again, of her seeing Patrick Wilson through the binoculars at the camp. And then there's another one mixed in there. It's like, do we, like, obviously for the plan, when the plan comes together,
Patrick Wilson.
Okay.
I love Patrick Wilson in this movie. No, he reminded me of Jason Patrick from The Losers.
I was just going to say, now, because a lot of people are comparing this, The Losers, and then Expendables, which comes out, kind of this team.
Every one of us has been...
Oh, God. I actually had as much fun with The Losers as they do. And
I would put them in literally the exact same pick pen.
Yeah.
Like I would... I think if I, like, we were watching The Losers and the 18 back to back, I would forget which one we watched first.
Yeah. I would argue to say that I thought The Losers was better made.
I would say that The Losers had more to offer.
Yeah.
You know, like, there were jokes in The Losers that were just, like, smarter. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just jokes that, like, had just more, like, more thought in them. You know what I mean? Like, just some of the jokes that, like, Chris Evans would say where it was, like...
Yeah, like, for example...
Just, like, culture jokes. We're like, oh, like, that's funny pop culture reference. Or, like, you know, the yellow car joke when, Jeffrey Dean Morgan's like, oh, are you embarrassed to be an American classic? Like, that's funny because you're just like, oh, my God. You know, because, like, it's a muscle car from the past and this is funny because it's, like, testosterone, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it was kind of aware of itself. It seems even a little bit more than the A-Team was. Like, Jason Patrick definitely... You know, Patrick Wilson here, what I was referencing to, it plays the, you know, spoiler alert,
CIA.
He plays the ultimate bad guy, right? Mm-hmm. Which seems kind of obvious from the beginning. Just, I mean, you know, so, yeah, I mean, so it's not really much of a spoiler, but he definitely goes over the top, very funny, very ridiculous. But I think Jason Patrick goes even farther over the top, which I liked more, but was actually criticized more. Patrick's performance was criticized more as being...
Not in the same vein in the movie.
You know, and I would argue the same with Patrick Wilson. Like, he's so over the top that I think it is in another vein, but I kind of enjoyed that, because if it's a ridiculous movie anyway, why the fuck not? Go crazy? So, I liked him a lot. Definitely one of my favorite performances of his.
Doing even spoilers, there's a funny...
Yeah, sure. Spoilers, if you haven't seen it, go see it. You'll have a good time. Yeah, turn it off, because we're going to spoil it. So.
There was so in the beginning of the movie, we meet this general, I guess, that we think died.
Oh, my God.
Actually, this is Slash Film. They brought this up.
Horrible.
But, like
horrible.
Dave Chen on Slash Film, he was like, the camera's, like, panning around this guy at the end of the reveal, and, like, and
Liam Neeson's character is talking about, like, oh my god, like, you're building up to this, and then, and Dave Chum is, like, thinking in his mind, there's not that many characters in the film that this could be, that would be surprising, because there's not that many characters in the film. And then it reveals this guy who has, like, he looks like Osama bin Laden, a white version of Osama bin Laden, and like, who is this guy? And so I don't know what that whole thing was, because I didn't really care about any of that.
See, that's the thing, though, about making, like, about doing stuff like that in movies where you don't care about any of the characters. Because it'd be like, it's like, wait a minute, who's that? What's the guy that I'm meeting? Oh, he's the drug king. What happened earlier?
Yeah.
Oh, there's the mission. They're supposed to do the mission, but what is this movie that we're watching? You know, it's just like, there's no investment, yeah. You know, so, like, that was funny. I just thought it was so stupid, because, like, like, how could he do that? Like, because, okay, so there's a general who, you know, this we're talking about, of course, the general who, in the beginning, is, like, old friends with Liam Neeson, and
it's a mission. Well, the whole movie relies on these plates that they're...
Which I will say was horrible... Yeah. Kind of a horrible, like, thing, you know, MacGuffin. Not a MacGuffin, really. I guess kind of a MacGuffin, but I would equate it actually to the stones from the Temple of Doom, because Temple of Doom, like, Temple of Doom is a fun movie, ridiculously stupid fun, yeah. Like, you know, but like, if I didn't know now, just because I'm older and I read for a film website that. The stones are the MacGuffin in Temple of Doom, and I was just like your everyday movie fan, and you said to me, hey, in the Temple of Doom, what was the MacGuffin? I would literally have to be like, oh, I don't...
I didn't know. I need to set it something.
I would have to be like, oh, it was the temple? Like, I would, like, not have... Like, so my point is, 6 weeks from now, when someone asks me, and hopefully no one asks me, but when someone asks me, like, hey, Dan, like, what was the thing in the A-Team that, like... Like, what was the reason for the whole movie? I would be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They were an 18?
That was very...
Like, yeah, so I'm just saying, like, what was it? The plates that they could like...
Print.
Literally print money. Yeah, yeah. It was like a print money thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, like... But the U.S. government does that anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though there's no backing. Yeah. So it's kind of... Like, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of a little... Stupid.
Little stupid. A lot
really
stupid.
Really stupid. Really. But like, I mean, I'm surprised that over 11 writers, according to Nikki Fink, who Joe Carnahan Cates, could have thought of a better thing than that.
Yeah.
I'm sure one of them did.
At some point. But some other elements of the movie that I like. The helicopter scene in the beginning where they literally flip over the helicopter.
Yeah.
And then they go up in the air. I liked it. Like, it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun.
And,
yeah.
And then they're like. In terms of comedy, actually, it's kind of funny, because...
What's the thing? That's my favorite part of this movie.
Well,
I laughed a lot.
You did? See, I didn't.
See, I laughed a lot. That's like the main reason I liked the movie. I laughed a lot. That was the main reason I didn't like Prince of Persia.
Yeah, yeah.
Is because there's no... It's like, so you said, it's all serious. Exposition. It's all exposition, so there's really no jokes, so it's not funny, so there's no real enjoyment out of it. And then A-Team, I laughed a lot, so even though it was just as stupid as Prince of Persia... I liked that a lot more because I enjoyed myself. You know what I mean? That's literally the biggest difference.
In this movie, a lot of the time, there's a lot of scenes where the characters would talk about how cool it was what they just did. And like, true.
What I hated more than that, because like, reactions to cool stuff is kind of funny, I guess. But what I hated more than that is, at least on 3 or 4 occasions, either Bradley Cooper, Charlton Copley, or Bea Brackett said something like, "This is crazy, boss."
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what we're about to do is insane. And then usually Bradley Cooper would say that. And then Bea Brackett would say something like, "Fool!" And then Charlton Copley would, like, be totally into the idea because he's a mad dog, Murdoch. I didn't like that, like, all the motifs in the movie I didn't like. I assume this was a catchphrase from the television show. I've not watched enough episodes to know this.
Yeah.
But I assume one of the catchphrases from the show was Hannibal, Liam Neeson's character, saying, "I love it when a plan comes together."
I hope so, because I don't know why.
So I assume that in every episode he said that at least once.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that you need to see it 4 times in a 2-hour movie just to, like,
exactly.
warrant
like, yeah, that was like, awesome when that happened.
Like, say it once, and then it's like, and then they say it once in the beginning, and then there's they say a nice little really creative thing at the end. Well, no, that would have been funny. But they say it two other times in the middle of the movie.
They say it 10 minutes after.
So say it once at the beginning, and then bring it back as like a funny little, oh yeah, joke at the end.
Yeah.
But don't, just literally don't say it.
Yeah.
It's a throwaway line anyway, so just throw it away.
Yeah.
So, but anyway,
what did you think about? I mean, talked about flashbacks before, but what do you think about how they handled? I think it was two of the scenes, action scenes in this, where they talked about what they were doing as they were doing it.
I actually like that too. I think that's cool.
At first, like, oh, by the way, the end final sequence told. I thought it was a huge letdown in terms of like CG.
Yeah, for sure. And like, and I gotta say that like the whole thing is Bradley Cooper comes up with the plan at the end. You know? Yeah, he's like the he's like the right hand man,
yeah.
And it's like the dumbest plan in the world. Like, because I was wondering, I kept thinking that was a little confusing.
That's what you did wrong first. You kept thinking.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I apologize. I was wondering, like, when he was doing the ball trick, I was like, what does this have to do with anything, like, that he's talking about? And then at the end, when the machine picks up, I'm like, I literally, in the theater, I literally went, really?
Yeah.
Because, like, what they do is, there's, like, three big crates of shit. And, like, what I was just thinking is,
like the losers.
Would anyone lose? Would anyone choose? That's weird. That also ends in, like, a warehouse crate area.
Shipping dock.
Yeah. What I kept thinking, and I mean, obviously he's thinking, so I'm sorry. But what I was thinking about while that was happening was, like, could you move a crane's hand fast enough for three things that you could actually lose sight of one of them? You know what I mean? No, I guess, like, because, like, when you do, because, like, think about it, when you do with, like, little plastic cups, and you're doing it really quickly, like, that's actually hard, because it's, like, the hands over it. Right, so, like, that's difficult. But, like, huge fucking crates with, like, slow cranes. Like, was it that hard for Patrick Wilson not to be like, okay, that's the one with the shit.
And it's still
like,
moving.
Like, let me just follow him. Now, granted, I think, like, the point was that was an ultimate distraction for a whole nother thing. I forget, because I don't remember it, because it wasn't that memorable.
Do you remember the plan?
It wasn't that memorable of a movie, for sure. But
there was one shot that was so much fun.
I remember more from Narc, which I saw 7 years ago, than I do from 18, which I saw a week ago, actually, to the day.
Yeah, and this is weird. The two pet peeves. I hate in movies, and this another movie this recently. If you can remind me,
that'd be good. Probably Prince of Persia, because that movie does everything wrong.
Well, here's a movie where Brothers Bloom, like a movie does it right, and a movie that 18 does it wrong.
Okay,
let the audience, like, if you're doing that cup trick, like, show the full shot of it. Like, because kind of, like, I always hate that in movies where they show a magic trick, and, like,
oh, yeah.
And, like, and so, like, if you're showing it, like, because I would be like, oh, let me get, like, they're going to do it. Let me just kind of try to guess as an audience member to see which, if I can get it right.
Yeah,
and, like, good point. They cut it up 100 times, and you're good like, point. All right. And then, but in Brothers Bloom, they don't. And they did 30 take of it. The car trick. And there's another movie recently that did that too, like this year. It came out this year, and I can't think of it. But anyways,
you know what it is? You know what the difference is? I mean, and this is truly what I think it is.
Yeah.
It's like, you have, like, a guy like Rian Johnson, right? He doesn't make perfect movies. Like, The Brothers Bloom's not perfect. No. Brick's not perfect. But the thing about those movies that make them in their own right really just, like, just good, solid films, you know, like, you know, solid films, is that the mistakes, of which there are many, of course, are not hindrances to the film as a whole. You know what I mean? So, like, you have, you know, whether it be, like, a stupid line here or a stupid plot twist there, as a whole, the movie has a lot of components that totally work. So it's like, he obviously was adamant, Rian Johnson was adamant about having them only shoot the one shot of Rachel Weisz doing the card trick, learning how to do the card trick, and it took
It's easier than $3 million movie than or whatever.
Right, and that's part of it, right?
Thousands of people working at
that. Right, because you have less money, but you have less people, and you have more control. Okay, so okay, and Brothers
Bloom should make an excuse.
Brothers Bloom costs $20 million.
Yeah, but anyway, you're right.
So, but no. So, what I'm saying is, like, it's all about the levels that, like, the level of importance you give each decision, and it just seems like Carnahan in the last two movies he's made, Smoking Aces and this, has made decisions, like, has compromised on things he shouldn't have compromised with, and not compromised on things he should have.
Yeah.
Like, instead of vice versa.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it seems like Rian Johnson, he compromises on budget, and he finds a way to find the art in the lower budget movies anyway.
Yeah.
Carnahan, okay, even though Smoking Aces was a cheap movie, but like in the case of the A-Team, obviously didn't compromise on budget, and it's a big movie. But there are things in it, like you're saying with the Cup Trick, where he should have taken some initiatives, taken some control and said, listen, you know what, like Bradley, like fucking just learn how to do it.
Yeah.
Like and also I hate to say this, but like there's no way that Cup Trick is anywhere near as hard as the car trick that Rachel Weisz does. So like it wouldn't have taken as long.
That's all.
Like so just annoying because like you're saying it's like he's doing the Cup Trick, cuts back to Bea Bracus looking. Doing the Cup Trick, cuts back to Liam Neeson looking. It's like we don't need to see them looking. Yeah. Like we know that they're looking. Let us look too.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. Exactly. So yeah, totally. You know, and then also the kissing thing is another annoyance. But yeah. Go ahead, you have one more.
Well, the one, I mean, it's part of what we already talked about. But the CG stuff. There's one shot that, like, I'm surprised they let keep say in the movie. There's a shot where I think it's Bea Bracus is running away from the falling ship craters. And from a faraway shot, it looks cool. Because, like, you kind of, the shot where, like, you see them all down and they're from way out, like, a bird's eye view. But then there's, like, kind of a closer up shot where they're falling around him. And looks it looks like a Nintendo 64 video game.
Yeah, it does. I thought that.
How do they keep, I don't know, like, I would have loved, like, kind of, more. Because, like, the scene in the middle.
These big movies, I just always wonder about, like we were saying, like, about decisions.
Yeah.
Do you honestly think that, like, Carnahan and then, you know, Alex Young, or whoever, by the end, the main producer of the movie was, went into the editing room, and the editor was like, dude, all right, like, this is the best we got. Or, like, the effects, the effects room. And the guys were just like, listen, Joe, Alex, this is the best we got for the crate falling thing. I know it's shitty, but, like, this is honestly, you guys didn't give us enough. The green screen is pretty terrible, so, like, this is what we had to work with. I'm sorry. And you think, like, Carnahan honestly watched it and was like, all right,
we're just gonna 4,000 theaters.
He was like, Alex, like, how long we got until the movie comes out? Oh, a week. He's like, wow, we probably should have, like, scheduled it a little bit better. And Alex, or whoever the producer was like, yeah, for sure. And Joe, like, can we get any more time with the studio? Well, no, Joe, the movie comes out in a week. And then Joe kind of was like, oh, you know, fuck it. Like, people go see it, right, A-Team? And he was like, yeah, I mean, right? Yeah, Bradley Cooper was in Hangover. And Carnahan was like, yeah. And then they left. Like, does that happen?
I guess so.
Because, like, in Prince of Persia, there's also, like, two or three moments with really bad CG.
Yeah.
And, like, for the most part, there's pretty good effects. But then there are those, like, little moments. Or, like, maybe they don't watch the whole movie. And then maybe they go to the premiere and they're like, ah, shit, dude. We should watch. Carnahan's like, you know, Mike Newell's like, oh, that's what CG is.
Whenever I think of that in the movie, I'm like, wow, this. I always just picture where the actors are and where the green screen is. Like, that's all I can think about the whole time when I'm watching it.
Totally.
I was like, well, what looks real? I was like, well, that crate right in front of him looks real, and then nothing else looks real, and then so I'm like, wow.
It's just strange. And, like, it just makes it worse that movies like Avatar exist now, because it just, like, it's so much.
Well, that's the thing about Avatar. There's, like, a level of commitment
becomes,
there.
It that just obviously becomes, like, and just money, a obviously. Rat race. You know, it's, like, literally who's winning and then who is doing the best shitty version.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because, like, there's just not enough movie. There's not enough money to make movies all, like, Inception will probably look like, or, you know, Avatar.
But the thing is also with the director. I mean, Christopher, like, he was given $200 million for that, and Mike Newell got $200 million for Prince of Persia. Like, it's not
for
like
sure,
like
sure.
The money. I don't think is. I think.
Yeah. I mean that's true. I think it seems like the priorities just aren't the way that they're supposed to be. Like, I mean, and we're saying all of this, and we're just saying that you should go see the A-Team because it is an enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
But, like, what does this say about the state of summer blockbusters? Where, like, the A-Team and the Karate Kid are probably your best bets if you want to see escapist films.
I've seen every single release on
the hands. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't seen the Karate Kid, but I mean, I've seen most of what's come out this year, and it's a little saddening that, like, in terms of, you know, studio-driven films, the A-Team. I mean, what else? I think the A-Team is the most enjoyable time I've had at a blockbuster this year.
Oh yeah, I enjoyed Robin Hood, but nowhere near.
Okay, Robin Hood. Right, Robin
but,
Hood.
But I wouldn't say it. That's just a
Robin
good
Hood.
Movie.
Robin Hood is an enjoyable movie. Okay, so Robin Hood and A-Team. Okay, Robin Hood's better. Robin Hood's a better movie. In terms of just, you know, depth and, like, characters and it's that are more, you know, well, more well written. You know,
yeah, I mean, Iron Man 2, obviously. I didn't. I
thought no, but see, like, but see, was... Iron Man 2. When I saw it, I definitely, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But that movie really, has been very retroactive for me. Oh. Like since I know you didn't like.
It from the beginning. Does retroactive mean while you're watching you hate it?
But like, no, that happened to you. Okay. But like I said, I saw the press screening.
Yeah,
you know, and I formed my opinion. And then I actually went with my family 5 days later, and I really, like, disliked it a lot more. And then after that, like, I just kept disliking it more. The A-Team, I'm pretty set on just how much I enjoy it. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, it is a dumb movie. But, like, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, Iron Man 2, like, actually, the Iron Man movies, I know you don't like Iron Man 1 that much either, but, like, the Iron Man movies and the public's reaction to them really, I think, speaks to movies in general. Iron Man came out a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Relatively smart, very fun, well-made blockbuster. Most people felt Iron Man 2, you know, overblown, convoluted, overly expensive, poorly written in general film. And that's literally, I feel like, what's been happening. And it's finally, and this, I guess, this might be a good thing. It's finally producing diminishing returns.
Yeah, no, I'm
you know,
I'm
Prince of Persia did bad, A-Team did bad, Robin Hood did poorly. You know, at least domestically, I think it's kind of interesting now that
the international
sales are saving these films. Actually, yeah. But
it was it's what I read. I forget what the article was. Film.com, maybe 7 reasons why the summer has been so disappointing. And like one of the reasons was like Iron Man 2 wasn't a must see movie. Like the word of mouth of these movies are no one's telling their friends.
Oh my god! Oh, dude, you gotta go see Iron Man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
There's like, no Dark Knight. There's no, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully we're seeing.
I mean, granted, it's early,
tonight,
but like, and but Inception, dude, like
still,
Killers.
Yeah,
Killers.
And Marmaduke, God, this is insane.
But I mean, like, Killers.
Yeah.
Was like someone gave Robert Luketic $75 million to make a movie with two almost stars in a genre he had no business even trying for $25 million. For
yeah.
$25 million,
yeah.
Right? Lionsgate. Like, what? I don't understand how that guy, that studio, and those two stars made that movie. Ashton Kutcher's never made an action movie. Katherine Heigl, I played the exact same role. So okay, Robert Luketic has never made an action movie. Lionsgate has never fully financed an action movie. So. What?
That has to be the most expensive movie, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So what made those people in that room think at that time, oh, do you guys want to make an adaptation, an expensive adaptation, of a not-great screenplay, even though none of us really know what we're doing? Like, let's just do that. Let's do that. Because this is the perfect time to offer the public, like, a Mr. and Mrs. Smith remake with less famous stars and a worse director. Like, what? Like, why? How did that decision get made? Like, how did these decisions get made? That is literally what I always wonder about, like, when I see this. Like, Marmaduke. Is it because Marlon and Me was so successful? Like, was...
I can answer that, yes.
Was it because Marlon and Me was that successful that people were like, oh, dude, like, if we do a Marmaduke and we have Owen Wilson voice Marmaduke, it'll be like Marlon and Me if people go see it.
Wait, is he the voice? I have no idea about that movie. I never
watched it. Yeah, he's the voice of
Marmaduke. So,
yeah.
Who's the people in the movie? Is there people? I thought he was in the movie.
I think William H. Macy's the bad guy, I heard.
I thought...
But no, he's the voice.
He's not. You don't see his face in it at all.
But no, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, really?
So, like, do people make those decisions? Are people, like, is that the thought process that goes through people's heads? Like, oh, dude, Marley and Me, Owen Wilson, Marmaduke, comic strip... CG Dogs, Garfield was kind of successful.
George Lopez, sorry.
Owen Wilson was in Marley and Me, so it's going to be success. Like, what? Is that what happens? Like, I'm just saying. So, and I think hopefully, these recent lack of success of movies that are getting critically bashed will lead studios to maybe take more risks, make more movies like what hopefully Inception will be, like what The Dark Knight was, what, you know, give me another movie from last year. I don't even know.
Star Trek was.
What District 9 was. You know, make movies for $30 million. Just fucking make them watchable. You know what I mean? Like, make them smart. I don't know. It just seems kind of crazy. But anyway, so I mean, I just think it says a lot that the A-Team is really one of the most enjoyable studio films out there right now. You know, because it's enjoyable. But, you know, but retarded.
Retarded.
And it's
simply retarded.
And it's just a shame.
Not to offend anyone. All right.
Yeah. All right, well,
we can wrap it up. I mean, we were going to talk about Winter's Bone. I saw it a month ago or so.
Oh, we were talking about Winter's Bone, yeah.
I mean, thank God the limited releases are kind of...
True, thank God. Kind of, thank God for digital... Hey, you know what? Thank God for digital on film. Demand. You know, thank God also distribution. But thank God for the ability of people to make movies on cheap because of digital technology, because like movies like Winter Bone would not be getting made. You know, I don't even know if that was shot on film, but my point is because of editing technology and whatnot, even still, you know, these great movies, which, you know, only, you know, thousands of people will see, but the point is at least somebody will see him, you know. And so I haven't seen Winter's Bone, but I'm reading the book right now by Daniel Woodrell, and it is very cinematic. I can totally see how it got made into a movie.
Yeah.
It's got a noir like plot line.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, set in the West. So it kind of actually reminds me a little bit of a Coen Brothers thing, kind of, except obviously less quirky.
Not quirky at all.
I mean, obviously raw and realistic, but so I'm very excited.
It's like Fargo
And it's cool. I know John Hawkes plays Teardrop.
Oh yeah, I was going to say a few things about it. Yeah,
I'm really excited to see that.
Yeah, this is the film that won the top prize at Sundance this year, and Jennifer Lawrence, kind of a breakout role. She's fantastic in it. She plays this
Reed Dolly.
Yeah, she has to get her father's in jail, or her father is on a bail bond, and their house, he put their house on the bail bond, and so if she doesn't track down her father and deal with this shit,
they lose the house.
They lose the house and have nothing. And her mom's kind of has some type of disability that they don't really say in the film, but so she's kind of taking care of her and her two. It's funny, in the book, I think it's two sisters, right?
No.
Did they?
I'm pretty sure
because there was a Q&A. It's either two brothers or two sisters, and they talked about it in the Q&A that they were all set to go with two brothers and two sisters, or one whatever it was, while they were shooting, and then it just didn't. They couldn't find anyone, so they just did two. A brother and a sister in the movie.
Yeah, it's two brothers in the book.
Okay, so they got a girl, and the girl's great, and the young girl is really good. But no, it's kind of like this. This story of just this girl who has to kind of it's a very tight knit community, and they don't want any secrets to get out or kind of
it's about meth.
Finish what you know. And anyway, so she kind of has to fight back, kind of like a High Noon type thing, like no one.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like that kind of contained storyline.
Yeah, people are comparing it to Frozen River, which this is a little bigger budget, and obviously because
almost $2 million is the budget for this.
Yeah, but Frozen River is like really cheap.
It was
like, ridiculous, like 100. I mean, less than 500,000 something.
Oh, wow.
Small, yeah.
Wow.
And but it's beautifully shot actually on the red camera they used, and like there's little details like peppered throughout the film, like the environment, like it totally pulls you in, like great performance. There's like kind of some shocking things that happen at the end that really make it really memorable. John Hawkes is actually a standout. I've never seen him in a terrifying kind of way. Like he's always
he doesn't have a terrifying stature.
Right.
You know, I always think of him, and this kind of probably does not do Mr. Hawkes' career justice because he's had a great one. But I always think of him in The Perfect Storm as the loser of the losers, you know, in that movie. And I love them actually in that movie.
Isn't it funny? He's the only person that's in Rush Hour and Blue Streak. I love both those movies. I grew up on those.
Fun fact of the day.
He's in, and actually, I have no idea.
And he's in Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Which is like a serious version of both of those movies.
Yeah. But no, I mean, in Deadwood, I saw a few episodes of that.
That's one of his most popular.
But I mean, he's an American gangster. He's been a lot of stuff.
No, he's one of the great character actors. He's a working man's John C. Reilly, John C. Reilly is a working man's character actor. So he is like, you know, low of the totem pole of amazing, prolific actors. But I was gonna say talented as anyone, but saying in this movie,
he's fantastic. Yeah. No, but I would say absolutely run out and check this out. Definitely one of my favorites of the year so far.
When is it getting released?
Came out last week, limited release.
Did it? Oh my gosh!
We're kind of doing a platform release.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think it's a lock from what I've heard for at least a screenplay nomination.
Yeah,
I would say if the competition is the same level as it was last year for Best Actress. I would imagine that this young girl.
Well, I was gonna say, I feel like I just feel like they're gonna run out of steam by Oscar time.
You think
Oscar
so?
Time. Yeah, I really don't think.
I mean, because wasn't there? What was the small movie that could last year? Could it not? Is that why we don't know?
An Education premiered at Sundance and then did really well. So, I mean, hopefully. But
I mean, granted, An Education was more expensive.
Yeah.
It was $8 million.
I mean, and this movie's, like, really dark and, like, I don't know, like, it's, like, really...
Yeah.
And if you look at the top 10, there's always... I mean, An Education was kind of hopeful and... I guess so.
And Education did get a nomination for Best Picture, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it did do really well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, but for example... If we're going to talk about Frozen River,
yeah,
that got a screenplay nomination and a Best Actress.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, yeah, but I don't think this is kind of Best Picture material. But I agree with,
I'm not saying it's going to get Best Picture.
You said Best Screenplay.
Yeah, I'm saying Best Screenplay and Best Actress. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think this movie's big enough for that. But
definitely Best Actress. I mean, I'll be shocked. I'll be thankful that I said in my review that there's going to be five better.
I'm sure Hawks. Won't get a Best Supporting Actor nomination because that's always the most packed of all.
He's actually not in the movie for that long.
Wasn't I mean, you know, and so, like you said, it probably will lose a little bit of steam. So, yeah. I mean, you know, it'll always be the supporting players in a movie like this who'll suffer first just because, you know, because, like, I mean, if you look at, like, Half Nelson, Sharika Epps and Anthony Mackie both should have gotten nominated probably for supporting performances.
Yeah,
but you know, when a movie like that's going to lose steam, you know, Ryan Gosling's going to be the only person who's going to survive, which, I mean, is appropriate when you consider how much of, you know. So I imagine this girl will hopefully break through the fray.
Yeah, no. You know?
Yeah, unless The Blind Side 2 comes out, which
could
happen.
could
happen. So.
I think that wraps it up pretty much for this episode. Sure. I mean, any of the limited releases, I was gonna say.
Cyrus comes out, doesn't it?
Cyrus comes out tomorrow. By the time, and Valhalla Rising. It's good. Just got released.
Yeah, I mean, Valhalla Rising, you're not going to be able to see unless you live in New York or
LA. You can on demand.
It's available. That's right. Yeah, if anyone has
that ability. I have seen on demand. Actually, it's awesome. Like, all these movies are going to be
released. The Killer and Siamese on demand right now.
It's on Xbox Live, Amazon, and... So pretty much anyone can get it if they want to.
Yeah.
There's that, and there's also Alperio's Bounty, which you watch. Kind of fun.
Stupid. Yeah, fun, kind of forgettable.
Light.
Yeah. Imbrew's very light. Very light.
We'll be back next week, hopefully. We'll see Toy Story 3 tonight at midnight, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll be back next week to talk about Toy Story 3 and...
Jay Hex.
Oh, yeah, Jonah Hex.
Yeah, ugh, whatever.
All right, guys. Well, you can follow me at twitter.com/thefilmstage.
Follow me at twitter.com/